Hello and welcome to the Albion Obsessed podcast. You join us on the back of a much needed 3 points against Nottingham Forest. It wasn't pretty, but we got the job done. Before we dive into our Nottingham Forest analysis, we're going to chat about this week in Brighton and Hove Albion news, but we're also first, of course, going to introduce who we've got on the show today. We welcome back Phil. Phil, my friend, great to have you on the show. How are you?
2 weeks in a row, an absolute pleasure, and particularly coming off a much needed 3 points, as you said, Tom. We'll dive into it. Not the prettiest, but three nonetheless.
Yeah, man, I think it's one of those games where beforehand, if you'd said, do you want the scrappiest 1-0 win going, it would have just bitten your hand off, especially with a clean sheet as well. But as you say, more on that in a short while. Dagan, welcome back, my friend. It's like the start of a bad joke. A British man, an Australian, an American walk into a bar. But how are you, Dagan? How are you going stateside?
I'm doing reasonably well. Eager to get talking. Got a lot to cover. So let's dive in.
Yes, let's do it. I mean, I know I said to you guys off air about one of the first things we've got to talk about, and Dagan, you sort of winced. I don't blame you, but we've got to talk about the Roma defeat. Really, really disappointing way to start off our campaign in the last 16. Phil, a huge mountain to climb in the second leg next week. 4-0 down on aggregate. Just not our day. But I think, Phil, for me, what makes it even worse was, I think, when you look at those four goals, they seem, to at least some extent, quite avoidable. Defensive errors at the heart once again and costing Brighton.
I think it's been really the story of our season is just how soft our underbelly is as a defensive unit. Every time there's a half chance, it seems like opponents are, making the most of it. We witnessed that in full effect against Fulham as well, and Roma certainly continued with that trend. And it is errors back there. It's everyone. It's you can't really point the finger at anyone specifically, but it's just that there's no, where's the resolute defense? Where's this ability for these guys just to be tough back there and make it hard on the opposition? That's the number one job of a defender in any sport, is let's make it hard on the attackers. Let's make their job difficult. And that just hasn't been the case pretty much all season, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately so. I mean, what, 7 goals in 2 games? Really disappointing. And Dagan, as we say, errors are costing us. It's going to be part of the game. Of course it is. What did you make, just briefly, Dagan, of that sort of that scoreline? Did it flatter Roma? Did Brighton just sort of not turn up? What did you make of it?
So I think it did flatter Roma a little bit. I'm prone to optimism. I don't think we played as bad as a 4-0 game. We certainly made enough mistakes to get there. But we didn't finish our chances. I think Adingra had one in like the 6th minute. Welbeck had a couple of great looks at headers. It's a different game if that first one goes in and we're up in 6 minutes, right? I mean, we know. You only get so many of those chances. I think Welbeck had another one shortly after they scored. It was a pretty good look at a header close in front of the goal, if I'm not mistaken. And then their first goal is, very close to offside. And their third goal arguably just was offsides. Mm-hmm. So again, you add all those things together. Were we good enough? No. Did they deserve to win? Sure they did, of course. Did they deserve to beat us 4-0 and us to face this uphill climb that we have? Probably not. But nonetheless, that's what we face. And we've got to try to be up to the task here. Is that this Thursday? Is that right?
Yeah. Yep. This Thursday. Yeah, it's going to – I mean, it's not impossible. It has happened before, but it will take a monumental effort. Now, Dagan, I want to come to you on this one as well. I don't know what caught more flack from the Brighton and Hove Albion faithful, the actual game itself against Roma or Roberto De Zerbi's post-match comments. He said that he talked about Roma's mental strength, and then he talked about how everyone at the club, from the chairman down, including himself and the players, have to improve if they want to qualify for Europe and be that mainstay. What do you make of those comments, Dagan? And does De Zerbi deserve the flack he is getting from some of the Albion faithful?
Does he deserve it? Universally, maybe not, but I think it's fair that some would choose the path of being critical of him. I'm a big believer in you point a finger and 3 point back at yourself. I do think he's taken a little more ownership with respect to those comments as this past couple of days have worn on. I think probably he heard those back and thought, oh, even for what I mean, that may have come across a little harsh. Cause I think he does feel like rightly he's making his fair share of errors. Him talking about playing guys too much, it's preposterous. Pascal Gross has played the 51st most minutes of any Premier League outfield player, 51st. So it's not like he's, you know, second, third. I mean, there are tons of players who've played more minutes of football this year across, you know, across all games, 23, 24, international, et cetera. You know, we only had three over that 2000 minute sort of threshold. Those other two are unsurprisingly Dunk and Gilmore. But most teams have, you know, four, five, six, seven guys over that threshold. So it just doesn't hold out of water that, oh, the reason we have all these injuries and the reason we've struggled is we've played guys too much. That just doesn't check out. Because every team, you know, every team has had injuries, but they also wouldn't have been able to play as many guys, so many minutes, more than what we have. So I don't know. I have been disappointed in some of the decisions. I think a lot of us have been disappointed with Verbruggen not playing more. We've talked about that probably more than we need to here. But he, again, put in another good performance. We'll talk about later. I don't think any of the Roma game can be attributed to Steele. There was nothing that he, you know, he erred on. There were two mistakes where he gave the ball away that could have turned to goals, and they ultimately didn't. And I'm sure it would have been a very different conversation had they. But, yeah, I think it's a fair criticism. I think De Zerbi has been critical of a lot of our young players over and over and over again, in maybe ways that are meant to motivate them. We've talked about some of that in the past where it has appeared to. The refrain that Baleba isn't ready and we've used him so seldom, and then we see him and we're going to talk about him as, you know, likely man of the match. He was man of the match by the club, but yet he's not ready. And I just think he's got to take some ownership of all of these guys who the club is clearly deemed ready. They spent a lot of money for Baleba to fill a position of need. I know we've had some debate in our group chat about whether that outlay of money indicates assumed readiness or not. But I've thought he looked ready. Has he looked perfect? No. But has he looked ready enough to be on the pitch? I would say yes, especially given our scarcity of central midfield resources. I think De Zerbi does bear a fair amount of responsibility for the choices he's made. And I don't think he can blame the club singularly for not buying players. The not being ready for Europe, we had four and a half games of shutouts. That doesn't seem like not ready. And those two teams that are still playing are still playing. And Marseille looks certain to advance.
Not ready for De Zerbi ball, Dagan, I suppose. And, you know, this comes back to this thing where we're just seeing this element of stubbornness with De Zerbi. And at the end of the day, it's his job to manage the group that he has. And I think perhaps he just needs to be more, needs to show more adaptability. And that's been one of his, you know, kind of downfalls this season. I'm not sure if we spoke about it on the podcast this week or if it was a private conversation, but I just don't think he's ready for a bigger job than Brighton right now, you know, a Barca or something like that. Again, go back to this comment after the Roma game. I don't think he actually meant as much by it as what, you know, as what it was probably seen as. And that in itself is a problem because he needs to understand that his words matter. I think he was probably just saying, you know, it's on everyone to be better. And it you know, something that a lot of coaches say all the time, but he got the way it came out was wrong. And he needs to understand that. Can you imagine he said that as the manager of Barcelona, you know, like there would be hell to pay. And these are the kinds of he's had to deal with so many issues at Brighton this season. And I don't think he's solved enough of those problems yet. Again, I know it's kind of a bit bizarre having this conversation coming off a win in the Premier League, but at the end of the day, I think he needs to show that he can handle this adversity and come out the other side, find solutions for a lot of these problems, positionally, formation. I don't think he's shown enough problem solving as what I sort of gave him credit for earlier on in the season. You know, that adaptability that I spoke to the first time I came in on this podcast, I don't think he's shown enough of that for a bigger club to just throw an open checkbook at him and say, you know, whatever you want, it's yours. We want you at our club. I don't think he's personally ready for that job. I still think he's got some growing to do. And I think he needs to stay at Brighton and figure some of this stuff out personally. I know that's a bigger conversation, but that's just something that's been playing around in my mind recently.
No, I think it's all fair comments. I think you probably are right, Phil, in what you're saying about he probably didn't mean it as in like, oh, Tony Bloom's not very good. It was probably very much a case of we all need to improve and we all need to sort of like up-level ourselves, you know, the raise expectations. There was a really good interview that Paul Barber gave where he was talking about Roberto De Zerbi saying to him, Paul Barber, no, we need to change our mentality from thinking we're a top 10 team to we're a top 6 team. So that's just sort of like the ambition that De Zerbi has. I think the one comment that didn't, it did annoy me, but it sort of made me laugh was when he was talking about his reason for selecting Jean-Paul Van Hecke to play in the midfield last week. He said, because he didn't have any other midfielders. And I just had to laugh. I was like, you've got Carlos Baleba and Jakob Moder on the bench. And you're telling me you've got no midfielders. So yeah, that was a bit of an odd one, but hey ho, we certainly move. And I think, you know, the one you said about Dane, about the, you know, not resting players, over 100 changes in 28 Premier League games now, over 100. So, I don't know what else to say there. Let's talk about 7 of those 100 plus changes then, because it was 7 changes to the team that was beaten, convincingly by Roma. In came Bart Verbruggen, to many people's much pleasure. Veltman, Estupiñán, Moda, Baleba, Ferguson and Fati. Out went Steele, Lamptey, Igor, Gilmore, who was, of course, serving his the remainder of his ban, Buonanotte and Ciso and Welbeck. So that's now 110 changes in 28 games. So there you have it. Happy with the lineup. I mean, myself personally, Phil, I was really happy to see Jakob Moder and Carlos Baleba in the midfield. I was actually expecting Moder and Baleba to sort of line up in that double pivot, but Jakob Moder was actually the furthest forward of our midfield three, which was surprising, but he really set the tone in those opening 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think it might have been you that called for Gross to be looked at in that 10 role last week. And I sort of figured that was going to happen as well. But I think that it just seemed, again, we spoke about this last week, back to that 4 at the back. And then whatever happens above that happens. But, you know, having guys like Purvis in there, probably the role that they're more comfortable in. Jakob Moder showed some real positive signs further forward, and Baleba was he was an absolute beast in the middle. I was really impressed by what he offered in this game. We know what we're going to get from Adingra on one of the wings, whichever one it is. Ansu Fati looks still finding some form, obviously, but I was somewhat impressed by what I saw from Ferguson up top as well. I spoke last week about just this sheer lack of confidence that he seems to have and, you know, just not even comfortable with the ball at his feet. But I didn't really notice that this week against Forest. I thought he was, happy to kind of roam up the ground and go sort of looking for involvement. I thought he provided some really nice passing in this game. The opportunity up up the top didn't really come, or the opportunities, they didn't really come. But all round, I just thought that the team probably did look just a fraction more comfortable. Frankly, it's kind of maybe a little bit hard to tell whether that's just the fact that we were playing against one of these sort of teams that are fighting for relegation. And, you know, this calendar year, we have seemed to look decent against those teams and not decent against everyone else. But look, I was reasonably happy with the starting 11, which was put on the pitch. Obviously, Bart back in the mix as well. I think we're all calling for Bart to be just the number one moving forward. So reasonably happy with how it all looked, given that we obviously didn't have Gilmore at our disposal, and we still don't have João Pedro at our disposal as well.
Yeah, Dagan, Bart back in six, back four. Was that perhaps the strongest 11 we could have possibly put out?
I'm checking it again, looking how it was configured. Certainly close.
What about Barco?
Certainly close. Yeah. Another not ready who's looked incredibly impressive in his, you know, 15-minute cameo. I couldn't help but wonder, you know, why not throw him back on when we were getting our heads kicked in to get a few more minutes out there? That part sort of, I don't know, belies conventional thinking, right? I mean, almost makes me think he doesn't want to see that because he's just going to hear a lot more of, look at this guy, he's amazing. Why not put him out there? I don't get it. I don't get it. You're poking the bear, Phil. You're poking the bear. I was going to let Bart go. They'll let that dog lie. Not talk about him. But I am excited to see more of him. It'll be interesting to see if he does work his way onto the pitch again. I thought the lineup was sound. We weren't exactly, you know, lightning in a bottle though out there. If this had been a 0-0 draw and yet another disappointing home draw against one of those teams, it wouldn't have been undeserved. Yeah. So for all that it's worth, I mean, was it the best group? I don't know. Just not that exciting. We really miss João Pedro. That every time I watch us play, I just think we just don't have anybody remotely like this guy. Dingra, I think it's becoming increasingly clear he is a far scarier player on the left than on the right, which begs some interesting questions about what's the future of Matoma this summer.
Don't do it, Dagan. Don't do it. aren't they traveling to Matoma's homeland this summer? I mean, if that's not a sign that they're planning on keeping him around, I don't know what is.
I mean, from a purely cynical point of view, I mean, the shirt sales alone and the revenue that they must make off the back of Matoma, not that he is just some cash cow that the club should exploit, but obviously, you know, it's got to be in their thinking. But you do raise an interesting question there, Dagan, because I think it's fair to say Matoma, Fati, Adingra, and even in some cases in Nciso looks so much better on the left-hand side of midfield. So that's four players for one side. And on the other side, you've got what? Solly March?
Yeah.
That's it.
And Osman coming in prefers, I think, the left-hand side as well.
Yeah, it's not great. I mean, we've got that young Romanian lad whose name unfortunately escaped me. He's a left-footed right winger, I believe. So that's something. But yeah, it's a very sort of left-hand side heavy winger situation. And I know a lot of people will point to wingers and say, well, hang on, you know, surely they should be able to play on both sides. But if your system involves the needing to cut in and with overlapping fullbacks, yeah. So there's just a lot of right-handed, right-footed, left-sided players. It's just a bit mad. But no, I think what I was alluding to there as well, as you say, like, I think with all the injuries we've got, with the João Pedro missing, a lot of players being bang out of form as well, I do think that was probably the best 11 we could probably field. I mean, you know, in Nciso, maybe, but Nciso looked far from convincing against Roma. Looked really, really, really out of his depth at times. Far from the player we've seen already. But as the football started, you know, it was all Brighton. It was all the possession. Moda and Baleba were absolutely bossing that game. And we were making Forest certainly work quite hard for the opening period there. And it all sort of came to a head, really, when a free kick was given away by Nottingham Forest, which arguably should have been a second yellow card offence when Ansu Fati was brought down, which was slightly ironic considering the comments that were later made by Gibbs White in regards to another incident, which we'll chat about a bit later. And who should be putting the ball into the box? Pascal Gross whips it in. He goes into the near post and sells Moda, and the Nottingham Forest player, whose name I'm probably going to butcher the pronunciation of, so I do apologise in advance. It's I've just messed up. I'm so sorry, everyone, of this appalling podcast host not knowing the name of the player and not being able to pronounce it. So the Nottingham Forest player headed it into his own net.
Omobamadeli.
Thank you, Phil, for saving my blushes there. Yeah, that was embarrassing from me. Apologies there. So, yeah, Forrest give us a one-goal lead. Phil, bit of a shame that Moda didn't get a touch on it, because that would have been a fantastic way to sort of, because it was his first start for a very long time in the Premier League. But, we're on the score sheet. Who cares, right?
Yeah, he's still searching for that elusive goal, which has almost come a few times now. Obviously it credited as an own goal in the end, the only goal of the match. So our players have now, failed to actually score a goal in three straight games, including Europa or something like that. It hasn't looked good. It doesn't bode well for us trying to score four against Roma in the return leg. But look, I think in the case of that one, there's obviously a little bit of luck, but given just the ebbs and flows of the game, we probably deserved a goal however it came, and it happened to come in that way at that time. Had it not gone in as well, I think there's a decent shout for a penalty with the way that Dunk was almost suplexed to the ground in the box. So one way or another, I think that goal was fair enough in the overall sort of scheme of things. But obviously, you take that little piece of luck along the way. You have to in a game like football.
Yeah, I mean, Dagan, you've, bemoaned Brighton's lack of luck for the last couple of months. So do you feel like it was finally something, that Brighton were worthy of? Finally, a bit of lady luck on our side.
Yeah, I mean, that was the word for this game, right? We talk so much about other teams being clinical in front of goal. Forest had more XG than we did. They did not manufacture a goal. They had some chances. Origi, especially down that right side early in the game, had a couple of chances that he just made a mess of, which was fortuitous. And the kind of thing that normally feels like, right? We saw them barreling down the pitch, going the other direction. We did not have numbers back, and you just thought, okay, here we go. It's going to happen. They're going to score against the run of play, but they didn't. And then, to get a goal off an own goal headed in, Motor put himself in a good position and made it difficult, but certainly, it wasn't an otherworldly stop for the defender or for the keeper. But it squirted through, got in, we got a lead, and then we held on to it. And daggone it, that has to happen some. If you're going to, have a good run of form to end the year, they're not all going to be works of art. So to get 3 points from an ugly one, and I feel like we give up our fair share of ugly results, right? It just never feels like we're on the right side of one of these ugly results. So it was extra satisfying. And I think that might've been some of what we saw at the end of the match. Like, it was just a grindy, gritty, tough win. You see the coaching staff just, lose it at the end of it, right? I mean, they're just falling all over each other with excitement, and you would think it was a masterful work of art performance where you saw the best, and it was not that, and perhaps that makes it more satisfying.
Yeah, I think to some extent you're right, because you say we certainly make life hard for ourselves at times, so being able to sort of see out that sort of game was really important. I mean, Phil, within minutes of scoring, we were at the mercy of Nottingham Forest. Just you know, it could have been 1-1 straight away if Dick Origi was put through by Gibbs White, who had no one around him, and luckily, you know, Big Bart's there, he sticks out a leg, but it would have just been such a Brighton thing to do. Get a scrappy goal, think, all right, we're doing all right here, and then give away a goal pretty much straight away.
Not one Albion fan was surprised either. Literally not one. I couldn't believe it. And it probably speaks to a larger point. I'll throw you away because I'm probably the more amateur eye looking at, you know, certain technicalities in football, but it just seems like the opposition have acres and acres of space out wide in our defensive half whenever they please. Why is that? Why do we just invite them into wide open pastures down those flanks? I just can't understand it. That one, obviously, it was just, there was obviously a little bit of the defenders switched off. They didn't understand the high level of threat that opportunity was going to pose. The ball was put through. All of a sudden, you know, it's one of their players one-on-one with Verbruggen. He makes an excellent stop, obviously. But then there are just so many other times in the game where it just seems like we're inviting them to roam free down the flanks and inevitably either turn inside and put a shot on goal or put in a worrying cross. It just seems like it happens time and again, and I just can't wrap my head around it.
I do think, you know, the way we utilize our fullbacks is obviously in part of that. Purvis Estupiñán, and we know he loves a good attack. And I think Purvis is yet to be back at his best. Zerbi has said that the layoff, you know, has affected him. And he hasn't really got anywhere near back. I mean, I know he scored those two wonderful goals, you know, when he first returned. But the reality is he's not back to that level he was. And we've seen it over the last couple of weeks. Both Lamptey caught out as well, you know, being high up the pitch. The ball gets turned over really quickly. And those transitions are so, they're the places that you're going to get hurt. And if you've got your fullbacks high up the pitch, you know, you are going to just get hurt. And I think that's probably what it was. I think we've probably, you know, moved forward. They've spotted space in behind Purvis, pinged it over the top. But thankfully, as you say, Big Bart Verbrugge sticks out a leg and, you know, comes to the rescue, because that would have, as you say, been to no surprise to anyone. And Dagan, unfortunately, we know that the first half ended, second half started, very, very, very shaky start from the Albion. Forest, you know, was certainly the team in the ascendancy, had a couple of chances that we managed to sort of, you know, ride that wave, if you like, but not a very comfortable opening part for the second half.
No. And I can't think of when that left-footed shot from Wood came in, that Verbruggen just got his mitt on and pushed wide. But that was a harrowing moment for sure. Wood just has a knack for putting the ball in the back of the net. So it certainly felt like that was slightly terrifying.
Yeah, and Chris Wood has a history of scoring against us as well. He's a former loan player from New Zealand, and we had him on loan from West Bromwich Albion back in our promotion year in 2010-2011. And since then, of all the teams he's played for, he must have scored against us more than any ex-player perhaps we've ever had, or at least it seems that way. Whenever Chris Wood's on the pitch, no matter who he plays for, whether it was Newcastle, I think Millwall for a time as well, just always seems to score for us and against us, sorry, and that's very frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were maybe a little better. I can remember a couple of times where they got a real head of steam at us. But it did seem that we were a little more compact in our defending. What was striking, and I didn't think about this until you made your comment, Phil, about how vulnerable we are to teams, you know, playing behind us into the space out wide. What doesn't happen as much when we play the back three is that what does happen is those guys get spread wide and we get played through the channels, and they seem even more discombobulated about how to cover space and how to move, and the line isn't held, one guy is further back, and so as harrowing it is to see those attacks out wide, I'm happy to see it, because I think we just look better with the back four, even when that back four is truly a back two, which most of the time it is. But it seems like in tandem, they know how to play together, and in a trio, they're just some real struggles. And I don't know if that's just my imagination, but it feels like we're vulnerable internally, and we just don't, I don't know, we get guys sort of making those lateral runs and finding space in between, and timing them well. And Dybala really hurt us, obviously, there on that first goal.
Yeah, it's just an interesting tactical switch, isn't it? I think that most fans were pretty glad, as we said at the start of the show, reverting to that back four, because the back three, Dagan, as you say, you know, it naturally gets stretched, so you're covering both sides of the pitch. And I don't know if also Baleba has a big impact on that. I mean, I know in the past we've seen him drop in between the two centre backs, which has been really, really useful. But Baleba yesterday, he was just so good at, you know, making those surging runs forward, and he was getting us up the pitch. And I think that also certainly helped having that energy in the middle, which, you know, I've been calling out for all season. I know Baleba isn't the finished article yet. I know he's not going to be, you know, up to Caicedo's sort of high standards that we saw when he was here with us. But I watched his performance at times yesterday, and I'm sort of scratching my head to thinking, why on earth is he not starting every week? You know, but I know, you know, one swallow does not make a summer, as they say. But no, certainly very impressed with him. I think that it just did solidify us at times, and we didn't look, although Forest were sort of the more dangerous of teams, I don't think I ever felt truly like we were under the cosh, so to speak. Let's talk about Baleba's midfield partner then, Phil. Let's talk about Jakub Moda, because Jakub Moda was a very lucky boy. I do think it's worth saying here that just as Jakub Moda puts in the tackle on Williams, blooming Gibbs White sticks out his foot, tries to trip him up. I think if you're gonna book Moda for that, you've got to book Gibbs White as well, because that is you can't be doing that. You can't be kicking out other players. Not that it justifies what Moda did, but I just think it's just worth mentioning that that did not sit well with me. That seemed very unsportsmanlike, and I thought it was ironic that at the end he was moaning about, oh, he should have got a red card, blah 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 blah. You can't sit on your high horse because you've kicked out him. But anyway, I waffle on. Phil, was it a red card?
I thought so. I'm not going to lie. I thought he was incredibly lucky, because and it was just obviously a moment of madness from him, which maybe it happened from that challenge, you know, a second earlier. But just the way he went in, the contact that was made on the ankle studs up. If the foot is planted, it's game over. The fact that his foot swept out has saved him in this case. But I think, you know, through consistency of what we've seen throughout the season, how we would feel if that challenge happened on one of our players, I know I would be scathing if it wasn't given a red card. We do seem to be on the wrong end of a lot of those types of challenges. Obviously, we weren't in this case. There was a narrative which went right the way through this game as well, where the ref gave out a bunch of yellows quite early, perhaps a little bit too eager to give some of those out. Then he couldn't give the second yellow in that situation that we spoke about before, which led to the goal. And then in this case, I had no issues with the process. Start with a yellow, then we'll go upstairs, have a closer inspection, and figure it out from there. But I was thinking Jakob's in some real trouble here. I think a lot of the players were thinking the same thing, probably De Zerbi as well. I think we dodged a bullet in this match, full stop. And we certainly dodged a bullet in that scenario as well. It just kind of had Sheffield written all over it, didn't it? 1-0 up, and then we've got to hang on for you know, 20, 30 minutes, but, you know, wasn't to be. And again, we've been on the wrong end of some stuff more than enough times this season and in recent history as well. You know, that kind of, in theory, it's supposed to level itself out over time. It certainly doesn't in the Premier League where you've got these big six teams, but it helped us in this case. Maybe the Big Ten team, you know, got the rub of the green in this case.
So, you know, I always think about what is the entertainment value of this result, and Forest losing keeps a relegation fight alive and also prevents there being a very clear bottom three. That's the three teams that just came up, which people are very fond of talking about, the imbalance and the difficulty of staying up. And so, you know, keeping Forest within striking distance of Luton, or Luton within striking distance of Forest, I think is an appealing storyline. And I know no one likes to believe that those things matter, but I think they do. And we are right now not as much of a threat to the established order. And so us taking a win doesn't hurt. So I'll just, those are facts where on the occasion that it benefited us, doesn't benefit us today the same as it would have at a different point in the season. Now maybe it does, I guess, if we creep into Europe, but it's not at the expense of, you know, us getting the Champions League instead of a United or a Spurs. The other thing I'll say is I have to wonder if sort of fairness, Tom, to your point about Gibbs White putting his foot up, just reached into the equation. They were like, this guy wasn't hurt, and he may not be late to this tackle if he doesn't have to hurdle an attempted trip. In basketball, a lot of times, like, someone will commit sort of a half foul, and then the ball will go out of bounds off the person that's fouled, but they'll just give the ball to that team, sort of knowing, like, rather than make a call either way here, we're just going to give them the ball back. Now in the era of review, referees can't do that because a team will challenge it, and then it will go to the wrong team, even though it's the technically right team. And so here was an occasion where they had review. Maybe they didn't follow the letter of the rule, but I think they kind of got it right, for lack of a better word. Like, I really feel like it was a fair decision, even if it wasn't the technically right decision. Because I really don't think he would have been as late had it not been for Gibbs White's, you know, attempted trip, which, again, had that landed, like, would that have just been a yellow? I guess. I don't know. I just offer that up.
No, I think you've made a really valid point there, Dagan, because as you say, like, you know, Moda's tackle, you know, is within the context of just almost being trying to be tripped by Gibbs White. So you can't, so that maybe perhaps saved him from a red card. Sorry. I do wonder if what might have happened to Jakob Moda, whether we would have ever seen him again if he'd gotten a red card. Maybe he would have gone down the road of Moda Hood, who never really came back after that. That Sheffield United game, although he did start the next game he was available for, but only for 45 minutes because he wasn't.
That was it.
Yeah.
So, sliding doors, Tom.
Yeah, man.
It's sliding like doors.
It rhymes.
And just quickly, look, I certainly don't disagree with the point that Dagan made as well, but I think most football fans are just going to look at a challenge in isolation and hope to understand what is red worthy and what isn't. And I come away from that feeling more confused about what constitutes a red card. That's the reality. I suppose, you know, you can also compare it to the McNeil challenge we saw against Tottenham. Different levels as well. So,
yeah, all very fair, all very fair. I would have been absolutely fuming if that was against us and it wasn't a red, though. That was probably the biggest noteworthy moment of the second half in our regards. I don't think we had really many opportunities, and Ciso fired narrowly wide when he came on. But I do think, Dagan, one of the big things I was certainly very impressed with, and as you've sort of already alluded to in this podcast, is the game management at the end. You know, we've seen on time and time again, Brighton's game management hasn't always been the strongest. But, you know, the last, you know, during injury time, the last 5 minutes of regular time as well, we just seem to sort of have that sort of nous about us where we were actually doing the right thing, taking the ball to the corner, winning successive corners. It was just quite refreshing to see.
Yeah, it was hilarious. Because we usually don't, I feel like, engage in such activity with regularity. But Gross and Lalana in particular were just having none of it. I don't know what was being said, you know, but Lalana was hot as soon as he hit the pitch. I mean, he was it was a blast to watch him because he was, you know, just chippy and in people's faces and antagonizing. And it really felt like Forrest's whole team had tilted their attention to kicking Gross and arguing with Lalana over the last stretch of the game and showed very little initiative in actually trying to score a goal. It was fantastic. I believe shithousery is the term. And it seemed purely that, and it was a joy for a change. I don't enjoy, you know, time wasting when it's not fair play, but I thought everything that Gross did was, you know, legitimate, right? He's just holding the ball in the corner, just waiting to bang it off somebody to produce yet another corner and another corner, another throw and another corner. A lot of fun to watch and gosh, just a relief to see us see it out.
Yeah. Yeah. There's always, I mean, myself and Joe being the perhaps more pessimistic, cynical members of the Helmet Obsessed podcast, we're probably just sitting there waiting, thinking, okay, so when are they going to hit us on the counter? When are we going to concede? Because it's going to happen. It was very nice that it didn't. And we actually won a game of football that sounds really pessimistic, but our record at the Amex has been excellent. Unbeaten in 12 league games at home, 6 wins, 6 draws since losing to West Ham in August. So the reality is, you know, it's not terrible. There's some draws in there, Fulham, Burnley, Sheffield United, that you sort of look at and go, oh, you know, we should, God, I hate that phrase. We should be beating teams like that. But the reality is you come away from those games and you scratch your head and thinking, how have we not seen that out? But it was a really good moment, Phil, for that final whistle to blow. And, you know, as Dagan's already said, you know, the coaching staff were really happy. The team were really happy. You know, on the graphics on today's episode, you've got Belabor and Verbrugge, arm around the other. It was just, you know, fantastic scenes. 3 points at home, scrappy, but we don't care.
I think I said McNeil before. I meant McGinn. I don't know where my brain went. Apologies about that. But look, as Dagan alluded to it, the reaction from the coaching staff was all you needed to see. I think that spoke to the feeling inside the club that this was just a mammoth relief to get 3 points and really keep us in the hunt. down the stretch, we've got a tough run of games coming up now, so anything less than 3 points was going to be against Forest was going to be hugely disappointing. Everyone knew that, the coaches certainly knew that, and they did not reserve their feelings at full time either. It was a nice sight to see that even though there are problems right now, and you know, we sit here and criticize some of the decisions and ways that De Zerbi is going about certain things, but you can't argue that that is a tight coaching group that all seem to be singing from the same hymn sheet. And that is a perfect example of that. They were just so relieved in that moment. It was cool to see.
Yeah, I think there was that sort of collective sort of exhale of, when that final whistle blew. And I think, as you say, Phil, you could see that in the coaching staff. Right then, chaps, before we look ahead to Thursday in our return leg to Roma, I'm going to push you for your player of the match, please. Dagan, I'll come to you first. Which Brighton Hove Albion player stood out for you?
At the top of this podium is Carlos Baleba. I think it's an easy choice. I might flank him with Gross and Lalana just for how they saw the game out, because it was endearing. But I think it was Baleba's day for this one.
Definitely, definitely. Will, how about you?
Yeah, obviously an honorary Polish citizen as well. But you can't not give it to Baleba in this case. I think it's probably one of the most clear-cut man of the match decisions we've had this season in a Premier League game. props to Bart Verbruggen at the back, made a couple of good saves, and he does collect a clean sheet moving forward. But my vote's with Belabor as well.
Yeah, I'm going to make it a clean sweep. Yeah, Carlos Belabor, excellent. We haven't even talked about the run he went on. Was it the step over and Nico Williams just fell over? Absolutely scintillating. Yeah.
I think they call that an ankle breaker.
They do. In basketball, they do call it an ankle breaker, and it certainly was that. He almost scored early, too. He bent a little exploratory ball right past the post. I like to see him pull the trigger from out there.
It's going to be amazing when he does actually score a goal, because that is the part of his game that is yet to develop. It's the crisp finish with those shots from outside the box. They can go literally anywhere. And when he starts to clean some of that stuff up, when he does put one in the back of the net, it's going to be incredible.
Let's hope that it's both him and Gilmore getting two of the four that we need in regular time against Roma. Let's root for that.
Yeah, man. Okay, then, talking of the midfield, actually, I want to have this conversation going forward. Who is your midfield partnership? If we're going to play that double pivot. For me, I mean, I've been harping on about having a defensive midfielder all year. I was hoping before the ball was kicked, as soon as I saw Belabor on the team sheet, I was really hoping that he would stamp his authority on that game and make a sort of a claim for, yep, I'm here. I need to be in the starting 11 more often because this is what I can give you. For me, Belabor almost has to start going forward. I don't see how you can drop him from the Liverpool game, especially. Like, you know, I'm thinking like, you know what, almost 3 weeks in advance. But I just can't fathom why you wouldn't start him. But then again, I also can understand Gilmore's been ridiculously good this season. Gross has been phenomenal. So the midfield, how do you squeeze these three players, these three excellent players, into the same midfield? Do you play Gross at 10 while João Pedro's out? Or what do you do? I mean, what would you do, Dagan?
I know this is going to sound crazy. I would consider playing Gross at right back or at right wing. If João Pedro's back. If João Pedro's not back, Gross is at the 10. Gilmore and Belabor play in the midfield too. But I think João Pedro's supposed to be back March 31st. Is the thought. But yeah, going into Roma, I think you put Pascal Gross at the 10, and you hope that he finds Evan Ferguson for, you know, some goals in the center, or finds Welbeck. I wouldn't be opposed to seeing Gross, Welbeck, and Ferguson all three in attacking positions with Adingra in the fourth. Buonanotte is offering a lot too. You're talking about, was that our best lineup earlier? I think our best lineup right now has Buonanotte in it instead of Fatty, for sure. I'm coming back to that earlier comment. So if it's one of Ferguson or Welbeck, I think Buonanotte is probably the other. And the question for me is, right, he always looks so good centrally, and Gross is really creative from that right side when he's out there. I wouldn't object to him being there. I know we're not going to get, you know, anything over the top to stretch them. But his ability to put a ball in from wide is worth having. It'll be interesting to see where he is, but I like him in those forward positions.
Yeah. I mean, I know I sort of pulled the face when you said Gross at right back, but I think that was just because of comments obviously we've made earlier in the season and the emergence of Jack Hinchelwood and how brilliant that was. But obviously it was such a key part of how we played football, earlier on in the season, an inverted right back who was actually a midfielder who would take the ball into the middle of the pitch. It sort of makes you sort of think, why don't we do that anymore? You know, why? I mean, Gross did that under De Zerbi last season. And yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, he got, you know, he's not the paciest. But even when we played, I mean, you know, just recollection, when we played Manchester United in the FA Cup semi-final, that's where Gross started, I'm sure of it. And he was up against Rashford, and Rashford's rapid, and Gross was absolutely brilliant. So, you know, Just one of those things. Phil, just your two cents on that. Would you start all three? Would you drop one? How would you work it?
I don't think our defense can get any worse. So I'd be happy to put Gross at right back, and just let's get more attacking players on the park as well, because we're not scoring goals right now. We are struggling to create opportunities. I know I speak slightly in jest there, if that wasn't clear for the audience, but no, I'm willing to see it again. We did see it obviously at times last season, and it kind of worked at times for us in that period as well. I think now it's just, look, we're still fighting for something in the league, obviously, but I also just think it's really important to continue playing Belaba and give him an opportunity to develop. And again, we're talking about the dude that was our unanimous man of the match on the weekend. So it's not like it's not like we're worried to see him out there. You know, this could be really bad. You know, we're naming experienced players and thinking this could be really bad. Most weeks, you know, Purvis at left back. You know, at this point, that's why I'm like, we'll just play Barco, because I know that De Zerbi's being a little bit more conservative, you know, trying to hold Barco back and you know, until he's ready. But it's like, well, you know what could also be bad? Estupiñán making some poor mistakes or just not doing his defensive job back there as well. But that's a tangent. I don't mind Gross at right back, or at least seeing some of that moving forward. I also don't mind him at 10. Again, it's good that we do have some options, even with Pedro out. When Pedro's back, it obviously revolves around him. He's been easily our most promising striking option this season. I don't love Facundo out wide, frankly. I know we said earlier that Adingra looks more threatening on the left, and I totally understand that point. But I still think we, as an attacking outfit, look more threatening when we've got two really good wingers on the pitch. And if that means play Adingra on the right, that's what we have to do, unfortunately. Again, if we have a good option to play left. And I think João Pedro has looked really good in that role at times this season as well. And he does have that pace. So I don't love Buonanotte out wide on the right. So I still think right now, with the soldiers that we have, Adingra is our best option wide right. And then, yeah, whether it's Gross at 10, I'm pretty comfortable with that. But I would like to see Belaba and Gilmore get a really good run at our sort of central midfield duo moving forward.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. Fully agree.
What I was just going to say is, you know, Gross at right back now, if you had Belaba out there, becomes like more like Gross at right back last year and less like Milner at.
Oh, I think Dagan's frozen. Assuming this is what Dagan was going to say, when we've seen Gross at right back this season, it's been with Milner sort of with him as well. When we've seen the terrible, terrible lack of pace that gives us.
Yeah. The label would be more Caicedo-like, right? It would harken back to last year where you have someone who can recover when the ball's going the other way. Because certainly Gross is not going to track back and catch that winger from an advanced position. He's going to run and he's going to point at people where they should be going, but he's not going to get there. But we have someone else who potentially can, and that makes me feel like he could play right back in a way that, you know, I think would be exposed without him there. If we had Motor and Gilmore in the middle, for example, I think that would be a calamity.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. And also with Belaba in the middle, it means that Billy Gilmore can do more of what Billy Gilmore really excels at, which is pinging the ball around with his incredible range of passing. So a really exciting midfield partnership for me, that would be. So
I wonder what impact losing Caicedo has actually had on Purvis as well. Just maybe sort of that two minds about some of the stuff that he wants to do going forward, knowing that we've got someone of the quality of Caicedo tracking back and plugging holes and you know, filling gaps defensively, going back the other way in cover. And that could just be another factor to why we just haven't seen Purvis look particularly comfortable for large stretches this season. I also just think the changing from four at the back to three at the back and moving him up the ground, it has probably cost him some form as well, because Purvis was back playing before Christmas. He's had plenty of time to sort of get his fitness back underneath him, but maybe it's just the fact that we haven't really settled on a formation this season that's hurting a bunch of these players as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the changing from a four to the three at the back was, playing a 3-4-2-1 without, because we didn't have any wingers, it seemed like, you know, a sensible choice. But I think we've sort of discussed on previous episodes as well, we just look so much more comfortable with four at the back. Everyone seems to know their job a lot more. And I think now it's just about getting the quality out of the players, as you say, Phil, that De Zerbi has at his disposal right now. So talking of getting that quality out, we've got a gargantuan job in the week of overturning a 4-0 aggregate score against Roma. It will take something pretty special for a team like ourselves that are struggling to, which sounds a bit mad, I know, after keeping a clean sheet, but we are struggling to defend. I think you can look at that game at the weekend and say, you know what, Dunk was better, but he still wasn't back to his imperious self. So it's going to be a difficult ask, Dagan, for Brighton to overcome that. Will you be too upset if Brighton do exit the Europa League here? But would it make you somewhat happier, I suppose, as long as Brighton sort of turn up and at least give it a good old go?
Yeah, I would love to see us get a home win. It would also add points to the England tally for that extra Champions League spot. So we could win this game and it be a part of us securing Europe next year by virtue of securing these extra points for England. So it is not a game without meaning in that sense alone. If you presume that we couldn't climb back from the 4-goal deficit, we are certainly a team capable of scoring 4 goals. We are certainly a team capable of beating another team by 4 goals. Are we capable of beating this Roma team by 4 goals? That's a question that remains to be seen. And you would think out of hand, no. But momentum is a funny thing. You know, they could have a guy sent off early. And we're you know, we get an early goal. There's a second goal on a penalty. A guy gets sent off. And then we've got to score 2 more in the remaining 60 minutes of the game. It's a weird sport, right? Those things are incredibly unlikely. But that's why you have to show up and play the game. So I'll hold out hope. Do I think it's likely? Would I give us more than a, you know, fractional, you know, percentage chance? Although I think we have like something like a 2.8% chance to advance still, which is a staggering number. I don't buy that. I would think it would be more like 0.2%, maybe lower. But I'll take it. So yeah, we'll show up and play.
There's obviously a large chance that they make some kind of adjustments to the starting 11 that we see from them as well, whether it's a more defensive unit or just, you know, trying to use it as a chance to rest one or two of their strikers. And we know how that works when you think, I'm just going to put a bunch of my starters on the bench and then we'll try and get to 45 minutes and see what happens from there. We know what that can look like. So, you know, there is a world where they sort of take too much of a defensive mindset into this game, go out, play too passively. Again, we created 4 chances against Roma in that first leg. Maybe it's just one of those days where literally everything turns to gold. You know, quite often what the opposition team does to us, you know, maybe we have one of those games.
Oh, that would be nice. Now, I'm not a superstitious person, but if you are Brighton and Hove Albion fans, listeners, viewers, please wear all of your luckiest garments on Thursday, be they pants, be they socks, be they a special tie that you once wore and it brought you luck. Just do it. All your routines that you think give you luck, do them, please, because we need every last little thing. And if you are going to the Amex on Thursday, you know, make it a cauldron of noise, bring back the sort of atmosphere we saw against Chelsea at home last season against Graham Potter, the Sheffield Wednesday playoff game all those years ago. That's what we need the Amex to be. It needs to be rocking. It needs to be a cauldron of noise. And we need to roar those boys on, because even if we don't overturn the aggregate and we still get a win, at least we can sort of hold our heads high and say, you know what? We still gave it our all. But no, thank you ever so much, Phil and Dagan, for joining me tonight, or as it may be for you, Phil, this morning, or you, Dagan, this afternoon. And thank you, viewers and listeners as well, for your time. Don't forget to like, share and subscribe for more content if you haven't done so already. Don't forget to check out One Klopp Shop and enter the code ALBIONOBSESSED for 10% off an order of any vintage football shirt of your choice. All that's left for me to say is, wherever you may be, whenever you may be, we'll see you next time. Take care.